She wants to know your opinion of scientists that are experimenting with making or remaking the Big Bang. If you've heard about that, you know, or they're trying to make a model of it or trying to recreate it, or isn't it dangerous to mess with those forces? She asks. If you know anything about
It would be if the Big Bang had actually happened. But I'm the kind of person who is more than half convinced that the Big Bang theory is a myth,
Okay.
and that it's based on the misunderstanding of something called the red shift. And I'd like to talk about that just for a moment before we, well, it won't be just a moment, you know me. Early on, the Big Bang theory came out of observations, astronomical observations, and in these observations, what they discovered was that the frequency of light coming from a specific gas, we'll say hydrogen, the frequency of light coming from hydrogen is a very specific, very stable frequency. It doesn't change much. And what the early observers saw was that the light coming from distant stars was not exactly what it should have been for hydrogen or helium or the others, and in fact, the light frequency was shifted a little bit toward the red end of the optical spectrum or the electromagnetic spectrum. And as they looked at stars completely surrounding the Earth in a sort of 360-degree spherical field that they could observe, they found that every single star they observed had the same red shift. And the only way that they could explain this was by something called a Doppler effect, which, without going into a long explanation, if something is moving away from you, then its frequency is reduced, or if it's something light like a star. If the light frequency is shifted toward the red, the Doppler effect says that indicates the star is moving away from you. If it had shifted toward the blue end of the spectrum, that would have indicated that star moving toward us. But in the early observations, what they found was that every single star they looked at, no matter which direction they looked at from Earth, was shifted toward the red end, indicating that every single star in the universe that they could observe was moving away from the Earth, and the Earth appeared to be the center of where it was moving from, since they were all moving away from the observer on Earth. The logical conclusion is the universe is expanding because it's moving away from us. Everything shifted to the red. And the Earth is at the center of that expansion. Now, most of us are aware that some other highly regarded authorities in this discussion, namely the Church, hundreds of years ago, used to tell us that the planet Earth was the center of God's universe. And everybody believed that until people like Copernicus and Bruno and a few other scientists began to actually observe the stars, and they concluded that no, the universe does not revolve around the Earth. The Earth is not the center of the universe. In fact, the sun appears to be something that we're revolving around. So the sun maybe is the center of the universe or some other place. And in fact, those early scientists were threatened with being burned at the stake for such heresy as to suggest that the Earth is not the center of God's universe. Well, when scientists came back with the observations and the conclusion that the redshift indicates that the Earth is at the center of the universe, I got suspicious. Because I just don't believe we're quite that important to the universe. And so I began to do some research on my own, and I discovered that there's one other conceivable explanation for the universe, or for the redshift. And it's something that we see often here on the Earth. As when the sun first comes up, the light from the sun is shifted a little toward the red. So sometimes at a sunrise, as the sun is just beginning to come up over the horizon, the sun looks a little more yellow. The light around it looks a little more reddish. And as the sun gets straight up overhead, those reddish hues go away. The sun looks a little whiter. Mm-hmm. And then as the sun goes down, we again see the light from the sun shift toward the red end of the electromagnetic spectrum. And the reason it does that is because the light is at sunrise, the light is coming through a certain distance of Earth's atmosphere. And the amount of atmosphere between your observation point and the sun, the amount of atmosphere is much longer than it is if it's straight overhead at noon. And so what physicists will tell you about the redshift for sunlight is that, this happens because the sunlight is passing through the atmosphere, and as it does that, it gives up some of its energy to the atmosphere, and that causes the light from the sun to shift to the red. Well, if there were something that filled the entire universe, the old guys used to call it the ether, now some people call it zero-point energy. There's a whole bunch of euphemistic names for it. But if the sun is filled with some sort of very, very, very fine something, we almost matter, then the redshift of the stars moving away from the Earth is explained by that sun or those starlight coming through whatever this sort of universal atmosphere is. And one of the key pieces of information that I find to be confirming of that theory is that one of the other things that scientists originally believed from their Doppler effect explanation, they discovered that the farther away a star is, the faster it was moving away from us, judging by the amount of redshift. So there was a direct correlation between the distance from Earth to the star. The greater the distance, the more redshift. The lower the distance, the less redshift. Just like the sun from an observer on the Earth at sunrise and sunset and noon. So anyway, it's just I would say, well, if the Big Bang actually happened, and I personally don't believe it did, and I have an experiment just love. I mean, if you have somebody in your audience who is a physicist or someone who is a grad student who has access to the proper equipment, I'd like to talk to him. You just give him my name, and we'll talk about an experiment that could be run that was already run in Pasadena, California, by Albert Michelson back in the early 1930s. It's already been an experiment run that indicates that the Big Bang theory is a myth. Mm-hmm. So now I can finally come back to your original question.
Yeah.
Isn't it dangerous to mess with these forces? Mm. Well, I don't know if it's dangerous or not. I think what she's referring to is the giant collider they built at CERN. where they're attempting to run experiments to, to sort of replicate what would have happened at the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
They're working with tremendously high physical world energy levels, and I don't know if it's dangerous or not.
Nope.
Yeah, we here in the States, there's a legend about some experiments done during World War II in which a ship rigged with some huge magnetic coils and in an experiment to try to make it invisible to radar, there's a legend that that ship disappeared during the first test, and that it reappeared somewhere else, some many miles away, and some of the crew members, when a ship then returned back to its original location, some of the crew members, according to the legend, were sort of stuck in the steel of the ship, almost as if while they were gone, they sort of drifted into the same area where the steel deck was, and when the ship returned to physical reality, they were stuck in that position. And I believe it was called the Philadelphia experiment.
Okay.
It's a legend. It probably did not really happen.
No.
But in the United States, UFOs never really happen. Even though they fly over the city of Phoenix and are observed by hundreds of thousands of observers who watch this thing that's so big they can't see both ends of it, and it's just like a couple hundred yards up off the ground. It's absolutely silent. It blocks out the stars, and it slowly moves for hundreds and hundreds of miles to the state of Arizona, flies right over Phoenix. And if you talk to anybody in this country about that who's connected with the military or the government, they will quickly explain to you that that didn't happen. And any of these other UFO things that people talk about didn't happen either. They were swamp gas, or they were the lights of flares, or...
Well, most of the time, there are explanations for...
Yeah.
These things that people see, but
yes,
pretty sure that
And in fact, I just saw a documentary a couple of weeks ago. I think the documentary's title was "I Know What I Saw," and in that documentary, there are a number of people. One of them is a former minister from in the French government, who managed to get all of their UFO files released into the public domain. And he said sort of the same thing you did. There are a lot of these that can be explained by normal things that are just someone's observed and hasn't understood what they're looking at. But he said there's a certain percentage of them that are completely unexplainable. There are some of those files, as I understand it, being made public knowledge in Great Britain.
Okay.
But here in the States, those things never happen.
Nope.
speaking of UFOs, just a short sidelight. The people I call UFO drivers, the little guys who are sitting in this are inside the thing flying these around, they evidently have some reason not to make themselves visible in the physical world at times. And I say that because I was at a Monroe Institute program a number of years ago, and it's one called Starline. It was put together by Francine King. It is an excellent, excellent program. And one evening during the program, there were a bunch of us standing up on a deck that's on top of the building, so you have a clear view of the sky out in the country with no city lights in the way. And people were looking for UFOs. You know, they wanted to see a UFO, and they're up there mentally calling UFOs to come, and they're trying to get UFOs to show up. And somebody walked over to me and said, "Well, you know, Bruce, do you sense any UFOs around?" And so I closed my eyes and kind of relaxed and got a strong impression of three of them, mm-hmm. and they were all small ones. And I got a sense of where they were located and communicated with one of the drivers of the UFO and asked him if he could make himself visible, you know, so we could see him. And he said, "Well," he said, "here in Virginia, we're way too close to some American military bases. And we know from experience that if we shift into physical reality, then we're going to show up on your radar. In a very short time, there are going to be some big, fast American Air Force fighter jets flying into this area, and we're going to have to get out of here." So I relayed that, and I thought to myself, I don't know if it's true or not, but that was my perception. Well, about 15 minutes later, Francine King, the one who was the leader of this particular program, came up on the roof, and the same person walked over and said, "Well, Francine, do you sense any UFOs around here?" And she stood there for a second, and then she pointed at the one where the guy I've been talking to, she pointed right at where he was, and she said, "Yeah, there's one over here, and there's one person in that one." And then she pointed at the second place I pointed at, and she said, "There's another one over there. He's a little bit further away, but it's just one person in that one." And then she pointed at the third place that I had pointed out, said, "And there's another one right over there, a little further away than the other two, just kind of hovering above the trees." And so I thought, overhearing that, I thought, well, either Francine and I are both crazy and making this up, or they're there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what?
I thought it was interesting that the UFO drivers were concerned about American Air Force mm-hmm. fighter planes.
Mm-hmm. I'm always wondering what they're doing here, because I actually just made a little video where I talk about UFOs. And the funny thing about people who see them or read about them, always sure that there's someone in there who has a message for us, and that's why they're here. And I'm like, well, couldn't they just be passing through, you know, like, just, they're going somewhere and just happen to pass Earth.
But, you kind of think of it, you know, just happen to be passing, you know, passing through from Alpha Centauri to some star system 500 billion, you know, million light years further on, and one of them turned to the other saying, "You know, I heard this Earth place is kind of interesting. Yeah. How about if we swoop down there and just kind of cruise around a while and take a look?
Why not?"
"Why not? You know, it's a long drive. We'll just, you know, take a little side trip."
Well, it might just take seconds for them. So.
Yeah.
Do you have any impression of that? If they're really someone who's trying to make contact, or it's kind of accidental when it happens?
My opinion is that sometimes these contacts are fully intended, sometimes these contacts are fully intended by the aliens who come to make contact, and there seem to be a number of different reasons why they make these contacts. Some of them appear to be contacts in which they're trying to learn more about humans and what we do and how we think and what we, they're just, you know, it's kind of like somebody who's gone off into the African jungle and discovered a new kind of monkey, and they'd like to observe it for a while to see what it does, you know, what it eats. You know, some seem to be that way. Some seem to be making contact in response to a human who has asked for contact. because there are some of us humans who, I suppose, are sort of curious about it and place our intent that we have some contact. And I think that at times, these aliens sort of say, "Well, we've got a person over here who really wants to make contact with us, and so let's go over and see what we can do."
Mm-hmm.
And there are a number of people who report taking rides in such spacecraft and coming back home and all sorts of things. I know, well, when I say I know, I really should say in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But from my experience, I would say that there are some who are definitely here observing, kind of like the ones I called Second Gath Group.
Mm.
They're definitely here observing, trying to learn and understand more about not just human life, but other life forms that exist in this reality that we call physical, to understand more about how we function and why we do the things we do.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it's some of these have been a pretty wild ride.
Yeah.
Yeah. And going back to places like CERN, and are they doing, you know, playing with something dangerous? Well, I don't really know.
Time will tell.
I don't really know.
No. Well, that was actually our last question.
Our last question?
Yeah.
Well.
Certainly, well, covered a great deal of...
Yeah. Well, and if you have more of me you'd like to do at some point, I'd be happy to.
I thought perhaps if I write in my... I'm making a blog post where I put this little file inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought about perhaps if people listen to this and they have additional questions, maybe, and you know, maybe some of the things you say make them curious to know other things, and then perhaps if they write their questions, we could do another talk.
Sounds like a great idea to me.
Me too.
Okay. Well, it's been a pleasure chatting with you, Anya.
You too, Bruce. Thank you so much for taking your time to do that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sticking with it and nailing me down to get it done.
Yeah, it took a while.
Yeah, that's a little bit of work, I know.
Yeah. Good.
Well, okay. Well, I'll sign off for now and chat with you again next time.
Yep. Have a great day.
You too. Love you, and I'll talk to you later.
Love you too.
Bye.
Bye.